Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone, no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. Hey, it's that time again where we sit down for coffee. Well, I'm sitting down. You might be folding laundry, going for a walk, cleaning the house, or Christmas shopping. I'm not sure what you're up to, but whatever you're doing, it's time for coffee. Today, we're hanging out with my friend Liz Patron. Liz and I are talking all about anxiety and depression, speaking up so others don't feel alone and behind, and carrying both heaviness and joy while coming out of a dark season. We know that there will be dark seasons, and we have to remember what the light feels like sometimes just to give us hope that the light will return. One thing Liz said that I just loved was, I think that we are all straddling some sort of pain and some sort of joy at different times of the day. And if that quote doesn't sum up 2020, I don't know what will. Friend, I want to challenge you today to look for both. Look for joy and look for sorrow. And if you are finding more sorrow than joy, hold them together. If you're finding more joy than sorrow, hold them together. Okay, now grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive into today's conversation. Hey y'all, welcome back to It's Time for Coffee. I'm here with my new friend, Liz Patron, and we are going to be talking all about the stigma behind anxiety, depression, and how you can kind of be both and. Like, you can kind of have the glass half full and struggle with anxiety and depression. It's going to be a really interesting conversation. Liz, thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to chat. So first, what's in your cup?
Well, I have to go back to work, so nothing fun. But I do have tea in my cup. Tea is my go-to. I try to have it always in the fall and winter, but really I have it all year long because it's really good. So,
when you go out and about, do you order tea out or do you order coffee when you go out?
No, I mean, I drink coffee in the morning, but it's noon here now. And if I had coffee in the afternoon, I would never fall asleep. So definitely coffee in the morning.
Nice. Okay. So we are going to talk about your book and mostly, I mean, it's kind of like hand in hand, your book and, but we're going to talk about the stigma behind anxiety, depression. And I'd love to hear kind of what propelled you into talking about stuff like this. Like, obviously you might've struggled with it, but what started your journey, talking, I mean, like, loudly, I guess that's the right word. Maybe I've had too much coffee this morning. So what started your journey in talking about anxiety and depression?
Well, the answer to that is kind of twofold. And the two pieces of that are my story and my mother's story. So starting with my story, I have four kids. And when my third daughter was born, I ended up getting postpartum depression, and I had not had that with the former two. So it was sort of a surprise. We weren't really prepared for it. We didn't really, really realize what it was. And by the time I figured it out, and I went to my doctor, I got up the courage to go to my doctor and said, I think I'm struggling with postpartum depression. This was the OBGYN that had delivered my daughter. His response was, I don't know what you want me to do. I'm not a psychologist. Which is terrible.
Right.
It's terrible. And the further I've been in this world and done work in this world, I just continue to be shocked at what a terrible answer that is. But so I came home and, you know, when you have small children, and I was working full time, just had a baby, you're not exactly surrounded with community. There's not a lot of time for social life. And I think especially as mothers, we put ourselves last on the list of things that are going to be attended to. So I was just lonely and isolated and now struggling. So I sat down in front of the computer and was like, I'm going to tell this story. I had just gotten a Facebook account. I didn't even know how it worked. My sister, who's younger than me and cooler than me, had set me up. So I sat down and wrote this post about having postpartum depression. I figured, you know, my aunt would read it and my mom would read it and that would be the end of the story. But what ended up happening is all these people in my life, you know, either commented or sent me messages or reached out to me and said, me too, you know, either I've been there, I am there, I love somebody who's been there, you know, or I've struggled in a different way and here's my story. And it was this immense moment of connection in a time where I felt extremely disconnected.
Yep.
And especially back then, my daughter's 10 now, so, you know, the internet was a little bit different and parenting spaces were just full of perfect images of perfect women and perfect families.
Yeah.
And this felt so real and authentic. So that was the beginning of writing for me. But then within a year, my mother died. She committed suicide, and she had struggled her whole life with bipolar disorder, anxiety, depression, addiction, which was probably a symptom of the untreated issues that she was dealing with. And we were never allowed to talk about it because she was very conscious of her image and the stigma around those things. So I had this platform already that was very small, but I said, I'm absolutely going to tell the truth about what happened here and what this struggle looked like. Because I think had we done a better job, and I say we, I mean us as a family, but also us as a society, talking about those things while she was still alive, she wouldn't have died. So it's too late to save her, but I think there's a lot of people that could benefit from some real, honest, frank conversations about struggles. And that's been my experience. I mean, the blog has grown, the community has grown, the book came out of that. There's a lot of people who read these stories and say, me too.
Yeah, and I think, man, I have a friend and she lost a child, and I remember her telling me so clearly and so, like, profoundly, like, we will tell this story. Like, we mm-hmm. we will, because there are others behind us who need to know the truth and who need to know that there's hope beyond this.
Mm-hmm. And we just do not do a good job as a society talking about these things, talking about loss and grief, especially. So the more people that are out there normalizing those conversations, the more people will have the courage to speak up, or even if they're not ready to speak up, will see that they're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the reasons I started the podcast was because we are the most connected generation, yet we're the loneliest, and we struggle with mm-hmm. anxiety and depression the most, yet we're so connected. And so there's like this, there's this disconnect of like, you know, our moms didn't know what their friends states away were cooking their kids for dinner. So mm-hmm. there was no comparison there. I can see what you're cooking your kids for dinner and immediately compare, well, shoot, my kids are having McDonald's, like, mm-hmm. and you just cooked a great meal. So I'm a worse mom than you because of this. And so there's like this, there's this disconnect where you could be like, oh man, girl, we drove through Chick-fil-A last week. Like, it's fine. Like there's this community that we can foster and have, or we can use it, we can use our powers for bad or good, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I love that you're using your power and your voice for good, even when it hurts so bad, right? Like, it's, mm-hmm. I know through my own grief, it's not easy to talk about. And it's sometimes this fine line of worrying if, like, am I using my past hurt for, am I exploiting it? Am I, you know, all of these mm-hmm. things. And there's this fine line. So how have you walked that line? How have you, or do you just like have this really good gut check where it's like, this is what we're doing?
In some ways, it's sort of the latter. I mean, I don't know if the situation with my mother hadn't happened the way it had happened, maybe I would have struggled more with that. But losing her the way we did really gave me a firm resolve that this was what needed to happen next. But the other side of that is, I think we have to be careful not to push ourselves to tell stories that we're not ready to tell, or tell stories that we're still in the middle of finishing. Because if you're deep down in the trenches and, you know, torn open and vulnerable, it's not going to be an easy time for you to put your heart out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a fine line in sharing what we've already walked through. And then in sharing what we've kind of healed from, instead of mm-hmm. sharing from a spot of like, kind of like that, like on a surgery table, like wide open, like, this is the worst and this is what I'm going through. Because when you're doing that, you're just like spewing. And when you've healed, you can say, okay, this is kind of what I've walked through. This is kind of what's going on. And you're able to help people more than almost like scare people.
Yeah. And the focus, I think, becomes on others rather than yourself. Like, yeah. When I sat down 7 years ago and first wrote this book, that iteration was exactly what you described of me on the surgery table. You know, it was angry, it was abandoned, it was sad, it was, you know, I was the unabashed hero of my own story. And none of that was real, but that was all necessary processing to get to what we get to, because I had to dig through my own stuff first. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all part of the process.
Yeah. So being in like kind of the throes of postpartum and then your mom passing, how did you, I mean, because I don't think it's you alone. How did you kind of come out of that depth?
I ended up sort of changing my life around when the postpartum depression happened. I got certified and started teaching yoga. Hmm. I got involved in birth work because I wanted to stay connected to that wound, I think, a little bit. And then I ended up getting pregnant with my fourth child. I was very pregnant, 37 weeks pregnant when my mom died. So I was sort of trying to heal the trauma of the birth when the new trauma of my mother's death happened. And I know you were talking in the introduction about this idea of both. Well, I'll tell you, there's no greater juxtaposition than to be giving birth while grieving death. You know what I mean? Like, to live between those two things is, it's sort of unbelievable. But I think it's also a macro symbol of what we're all doing on a daily basis. Like, that's a really big, broad, you know, black and white example. But I think we're all straddling some sort of pain and some sort of joy so many different times in the day. And then when my mother died, writing was a huge healing process, but also then I had that community that I had built up from coming out of the postpartum depression, and starting to speak honestly and connect with people, even if that connection was happening on the internet and not necessarily at mom's night out, because, you know, I didn't have time for that, but
right.
It gave me something to fall back on, and thank God for that.
Yeah. And I think too, I wonder if people don't really realize that we're holding both and, you know, I think, mm-hmm. I think the pandemic was a perfect example of like, of this both and situation where we didn't really realize, we kind of had these like conflicting emotions and people thought they were crazy. And it's like, no, that's the both and. You are able to stay at home and you're finding like this new rhythm at home and it's really sweet. But you're also like super kind of freaked out and mm-hmm. worried and sad and all these things that we lost. But like, oh man, look at my kid over at the table. Like, this is really cool. Or we're going on more nightly walks. We're playing more games as a family. I perfected a margarita at home. Like, these are all sweet, great things that came out of the pandemic or that we're still in. But also like the worry and the fear was very, very real. And so it was like this constant like juggling of both and. But it was also at the same time, I was like, oh, I don't have to juggle. Like, I can just like sit in this moment and be really sad for what's going on around me and finding joy in every day.
Yeah. And that's another thing that we have a really hard time with as a society, that concept of duality and living in between those two things. Mm-hmm. But how sad would it be to deny yourself the grace and beauty of those moments, you know, because you're supposed to be scared or struggling dealing with the gravity of what is a very grave situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just writing my newsletter. I told you I was like almost late to this conversation. Cause I was like writing. And it was just that concept of like, yeah, this is a really heavy time. Like, this is like, mm-hmm. we are living in such a dark season in the world, in the nation, and everything feels heavy. But as the great Dumbledore said, happiness can be found even in the darkest of times, if one only remembers to turn on the light.
So somebody just quoted that to me like within the last couple of days. So God must want me to pay attention to that.
Just turn on the light. Like, and it's hard. And it's not like, oh, just turn on the light. Cause you don't want to tell somebody struggling like in the depth of depression and anxiety, like, just turn on the light. It'll be fine. It's like telling someone to pray harder. Like, mm-hmm. no, like, we don't want to be those people, but we want to say like, okay, like, this is a really dark time. How can I be searching for joy right now? How can I be really intentionally looking to turn on the light, to find mm-hmm. the dang light switch sometimes? Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of the hardest part.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Hey, today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Faithful Counseling. So let's get real for a second. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I know for many of us that can be anxiety, depression, fear, or even broken relationships. These are all things that can be holding us back. But this is where Faithful Counseling comes in. Faithful Counseling is a worldwide counseling service that is making professional counseling accessible, affordable, and convenient so anyone and everyone can face life's challenges and get help anytime, anywhere. Faithful Counseling offers four different ways that you can connect with a licensed counselor. You can sit down for video calls, phone calls, live chats, or instant messaging. Every counselor on Faithful Counseling is licensed by their respective state board and has over 3,000 hours of experience. If you think Faithful Counseling is for you, you can sign up today and be matched with your counselor in 24 hours or less. Faithful Counseling is helping us live our healthiest lives in the comfort and safety of our own homes. Be sure to check out Faithful Counseling at faithfulcounseling.com/JeanetteTapley. And now back to today's show. How are you turning on light right now, like in this time?
One of the things I tell people, because a lot of people will reach out to me and say, you know, hey, I'm struggling or so-and-so struggling. What is your advice? And while I still consider myself completely unqualified to give advice, what I do say is sometimes we're not going to be able to find the light, right? Sometimes we're not going to be able to turn on the light ourselves. But what I think is really important is to remember that light exists. Because when you're wholly enclosed in darkness, you have to rely on faith to remember that light is even a thing. You know, it's not something that you can see with your senses. It's not something that you can, it's not in front of you because you're in the darkness. I'm not being very poetic about this, but, you know, I think you have to have lived enough of a life and come through enough tragedy to be able to hold in your heart that light is still there, even if you can't see it.
Yeah.
So in some ways, you know, having lived through tragic situations or having struggled makes you stronger.
Yeah.
Because you have that muscle memory of climbing out, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm always trying to remind myself, but I'm also trying to remind people in my life, you know, remember when you fill in the blank here, when you came through the postpartum depression, when you came through the loss of your mother, you know, just to use me as an example, but we have these building blocks in our lives, these badges, you know, from coming through adversity. And I think we have to trust that we're going to be able to come through this.
Yeah. I also was just thinking about when we're sick and how, like, you can be, like, laying in bed. And a lot of people make fun of their husbands for being sick. I'm actually the worst sick person in our family. Like, where I'm like, oh, I'm never going to be the same again. And so I'm, like, sick in bed, and I'm, like, my body aches, and I can't move, and I go super dramatic, where I'm like, I guess this is my life now. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to hurt. I'm always going to feel this way. Like, this is just my cross to bear. Like, okay, God, like, I'll just accept this. And then you start to feel better, and you're like, okay, cool, now I'm better. Let's move on. Well, instead of being like, this is just my cross to bear, I'm never going to feel again. I need to remember the times where I found joy in my body, where I was able to move and run. And I think that that's something, not to sound super cheesy or self-helpy by all means, but I think that's why, like, keeping a gratitude journal is really important, so we can look back and remember the light on our face. So we can remember, like, okay, that sun felt really warm that day. I remember that. I remember like laying in the hammock and finding, like, so much joy in this moment. So if we have this this booklet of, like, moments of great joy when we are feeling so low and down, we can almost, like, it's that muscle memory again of, like, climbing ourselves back out. And on the other side, like, I just went through, like, one of the hardest seasons of my life. And I remember laying in bed thinking and telling my husband, I don't know that I'll ever feel the same again. And he said, I think you will. I think you just have to remember this pit so that the next time you feel happy, you'll remember the difference. I think it's really important.
It's huge. And I'd even argue, I think it might sound hokey, but not only can you be okay again, but in some ways you can be better or stronger, you know, rebuilt around those scars in a way where the light will get in easier.
Yeah, and I think it's on that same in that same breath of like when we're sick and we're like, I'm never going to be the same again, and we get better, it being like, oh, okay, thank you, God, I am now better. Like being mm-hmm. thankful that we do kind of like come out of that part of it and are able to say like, okay, you did do something here, and acknowledging that so that we remember. I think there's a big part of remembrance. I think remembrance is really, really key in the Old Testament of the Bible, where it's like, remember what the Lord has done. Remember what the Lord has done. And I think that that's something I tend to do really, really badly, is I tend to forget what the Lord has done. So then the next time around, I'm like, oh, where are you? And he's like, oh my God, you just walked through this, Jeanette. Let's go. So tell us about your book. I know it's your story. And I just want to hear a little bit more about it.
It is. So I sat down and was like, I'm going to tell the truth about, you know, what happened in my family with my mother. But of course, it grew into a story first that was about me, and then really was about motherhood in general. So it's a series of pieces. I think there's like 16 or 17 chapters that are kind of standalone pieces that could be read by themselves, but also flow through a kind of timeline narrative that are really about some of the things that we've talked about here. This idea that you can be struggling, and very likely are, because most people are struggling with something. It doesn't have to be a huge, you know, diagnosis or a huge loss. But I mean, just look at what's going on right now. So we talk a lot about grief. In our society, I think we think of grief like we've lost to death a loved one, but I mean, we've lost so much recently due to the pandemic and the way we've had to adjust our lives, that there's grieving associated with every single one of those things. I mean, I think anybody living through this is grieving something right now.
Yeah.
And you can be grieving something and, just like you said, still enjoying the benefits of that loss, which is such a weird concept to try to wrap your mind around, but is so true. And so it's, you know, that idea and the idea of just normalizing conversation around stigmatized subjects like mental health. I'm an eating disorder survivor. I'm a suicide attempt survivor myself. I still deal with depression and anxiety on a regular basis. I have children who struggle with those things. And I think this should just be part of the conversation.
Yeah. I think it should be a part of the conversation, and not that we want it to be normalized where it's like, this is awesome, but like normalized enough to where it's like, hey, I've struggled here in the past. And when we make new friends or when we have relationships with people, it's something that's like, hey, if you see me like, here's some things you should watch for me. I had a friend who told me that one time, like, if I kind of disappear, this might be what I'm dealing with. So I just need you to be aware. And I think that that's a beautiful thing. When we're allowed to be aware for our people, and when our eyes are open for our friends' kids or our kids, all of those things, I think it just makes for a healthier world. And I am excited to see the next generation that we're raising kind of rise up in that, where, like my family, counseling wasn't normalized. It was a very much, it was like a, not a bad thing, but you know, just wasn't for our family. We just didn't do that. And so now having siblings and myself go through counseling, it's like, oh, this is awesome. Like, good. We're getting healthy. And then hearing, you know, like hearing how it's going to affect our kids. It's just a really exciting thing. But I think it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of like breaking down those barriers first.
Right. Vulnerability for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the pain points that you hit while launching your book during a pandemic? And how did that affect your anxiety and depression?
I have never launched a book before. You know, I mean, there's plenty of people who would have something to compare it to, but I didn't have anything to compare it to, which is probably good. It's interesting because it's such a microcosm example of how everything is right now. Because I had to find new and creative ways to connect with people, to connect with readers, to connect with other writers, to connect with podcasters, you know, to connect with the media. It wasn't the conventional, I'm going to go sit in Barnes & Noble and sign some books and we'll, you know, have a big party, which is sad because those things would have been great. And right. I would have loved to have a big party. But it also forced me to get outside of my own comfort zone, normal expected life, and come up with some creative things. And it honestly, it's resulted in some connections that I hope will stay for life. So I think we're all dealing with that in certain respects, you know, like, okay, how are we going to do Thanksgiving and Christmas this year? If those are things that you celebrate, how are we going to maintain relationships with our group of friends if we can't necessarily see them or see them as often as we want to see them? How are we going to stay connected to what's going on in the world without inundating ourselves and compromising our mental health by watching CNN 24 hours a day, which I want to do right now, of course.
I know. As soon as you said that, I'm like, should I check the... No, I'm not going to check on that.
So, I mean, it's been a quieter experience probably than it would have been had we not been in a pandemic, but that's also okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure that I would have been in a space where anything other than a quieter experience would have been healthy.
Yeah.
And it's felt very authentic, which is a beautiful thing. So I don't want to say I'm grateful for the circumstances, but it's another, you know, it's just another example of there's good to be found in that, yeah. I think.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too when you were saying that. It's like, this is it's a perfect both and. Like, well, would I rather have not launched this in a pandemic? Yes, like this is a sad thing. But there's been, like you said, connections made and it's forced you out of your comfort zone. So if there does come a next book, you kind of know, okay, well, what does this look like?
Right.
How do I do this better? Or how can I grow here? I just have to say, I love that you have a full-time job and wrote a book and have a family. Because I feel like the world right now tells us, well, you have to, like, be a full-time author and it has to, like, look super glamorous and all, like, or not. I don't know. But I'm like, I love that because that is real life. Like, that's just us chasing dreams, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, shoving dreams into the little empty spaces
that
fit into the day. I mean, to be fair, it took me 7 years to write the book.
Yeah.
But the other funny thing is that I have a career and we have some stability because of that. So I don't have to go hustle myself across the country either, which is, it's a privilege. But it also means that I have ownership of how I put myself out there. And that is a really lovely thing to have right now. And it's hard because you get on the internet and you see a lot of messages of, you know, you're not doing your job if you're not hustling, but I don't know if this is necessarily the season of hustling for a lot of people.
I think the 2020 has been the year of God stripping us of our idols. And I think a lot of our idols have been hustling. And I like can speak from experience where I was just like, if we're going to do something, we have to do it big. We have to do it right this minute. And it has to be a success. Mm-hmm. And that's God's like, I don't know why you think that. I never said that.
So I'm like, definitely a person who measures myself by output, you know. I want a to-do list and I want the items checked off, and then I'm gonna lay in bed at night and go through the list in my head, and I will gauge the success of my day based on whether or not I succeeded. But what has happened to us here, my husband is a teacher, I have 4 kids that are in virtual / hybrid school, I'm working full-time from home, I'm launching a book, I can't do it all. That's been the lesson of the pandemic for me is, what does my life look like when I cannot complete the items on the list? And how am I going to find satisfaction in my day when, you know, I can't gauge it by how successful I was?
Yeah.
Which has been a really interesting lesson.
Mm-hmm. My husband every day is like, hey, did you get some work done today? I'm like, yeah, but I could have done more. And he's like, you have got to stop saying that. That is the most ridiculous thing you say. And I'm like, that's absolutely, and I like caught myself saying it the other day. He's like, did you get some work done? I'm like, yeah, but I could have done more. So I had to stop. But it is, I'm the same way. I like to check things off my list. If I've already done it before I made my list, I put it on my list and then I check it off.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's like that satisfaction of like, well, I did that. So gold star. Okay. Since it's time for coffee right now, and in Ecclesiastes, we talked about there's a time for everything under the sun, a season for everything. What is it time for in your life right now?
I think it's time for prioritization. Deciding, like, you know, you were just saying that there's been a stripping away, and I 100% agree with that. That really resonates. So, you know, when you have cleansed yourself or stripped out those things, what pieces do I really prioritize enough to want to put back in?
Yeah.
I remember in the first couple of weeks of the pandemic, my husband and I were out for a run, and I said, I can't go back. Like, we can't just go back to the life that we were living, because it wasn't manageable. And every other day I'd be, you know, crying or freaking out and saying, I can't manage all this. It's too much. You know, we don't eat dinner together. We don't see each other. And so I hope, I mean, obviously I hope we stay healthy. I hope the country, you know, comes together. I hope there's some healing, but I also hope that we come together as a people with a better idea of what's important to us.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was the same thing during like the, I guess it was like during Texas lockdown, which is like April and May. We had weekly coffee dates with my girlfriends every Friday morning. And it was just so nice. And it was, that was one thing we kept saying, like, man, this is just like, it's so weird that there's nothing like to do. And one girl was like, I have afternoons at home and this is amazing. And I love this. And we're not running kids all over the place. And I just feel at peace. And I was like, how are we maintaining this when we go back to normal? Like, how is this something that will stay? And luckily my kids are bigger. So they're in like, their sports are before school now. And so we don't have to worry about, like, that after-school rush. But I see them all kind of back to normal now, and I'm like, oh, did we miss it? Like, did we lose the opportunity to slow down? Did we just pick right back up where we were? And that was my biggest heart cry. I was like, Lord, if you're going to transform me, like, transform me. Like you said, I don't want to go back. And not that, you know, what's right for my family isn't right for every family. I know that. But I've just kind of like sat in that stillness of like, okay, like it, but it's a weird stillness too. At the same, I'm like, should we be doing more? Mm-hmm. Should we be doing something?
Right.
Should I be hosting? Should I be, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, just chill out. Like, I feel like God's been telling me a lot lately, just chill out. So I feel like that's, I think it's time for reprioritizing is a really beautiful thing.
I hope so. And I hope we do it, you know, we're talking about on an individual basis, but I also hope, you know, like we see our employers value things like being able to work from home and, you know, having that family flexibility. I'm really lucky to have the employer that I have, and I'm not making any references to them. But in general, as a society, you know, if we valued things like downtime and rest and family time a little bit more than we do, I think we'd be doing everybody a great mental health and physical health favor.
Yeah. 100%. I agree. Okay, Liz, where can we find your book? How can we follow you and just kind of join you on your journey?
So the book is The Price of Admission, Embracing a Life of Grief and Joy, and you can get it anywhere that books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, plenty of indie bookstores, and it's a great time to support your independent bookstore because they are struggling.
Yep.
We're trying to get it out in libraries right now because I know there are a lot of people who don't have a lot of expendable income right now, and I do have some signed copies that I am able to sell myself so anybody could get a hold of me if they're interested in that. I'm on the internet. My website is lizpetrone.com. It's Petrone is P-E-T-R-O-N-E. And then I'm on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having such an inviting community that nobody is like, yes, I get to be a part of this, but a community that is accepting and beautiful. It's the club nobody wants to be a part of, but it's the club that we all need and know that it's necessary for all of us who struggle with hurt.
I couldn't be prouder to be hanging out with these people. They're my favorite.
Awesome.
And thank you for having these conversations, because I think that's so important, you know, and making a space where people feel comfortable just chatting about the real stuff.
Thanks. It's like we were starting. I'm like, this will be fun. This will be good. It is fun. My hope is that people always just feel comfortable, one, to always pick up their headphones and listen in, and two, I'm just so thankful for guests like you who come on and share their heart in such a real way, because I could talk, but that's not really going to help anybody. What's going to help people is other people's stories and being able to say, oh, me too. Like, you too. Mm. Like, I'm not alone. And that's the biggest heart of It's Time for Coffee, is that we will feel heard, valued, and never alone. And so
I love it.
You're helping us out here, man.
Thank you.
I say this every week, but I really mean it. I hope that you loved meeting our new friend today. I hope that you enjoyed meeting Liz and hearing her story, and that even if you don't have a story like Liz's, I hope that you will recognize the need for holding both. Remember that it's possible to grieve and find joy, especially during this holiday season. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.